Welcome to a Delco Nerd Network hot take. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen a hot take before, well, it's where a few friends get in a basement and we give our thoughts, we give our opinions on a TV show, a movie, or a game. Today, it's going to be a TV show, and that TV show is Fallout. Here to discuss, as always, a man who knows war. War never changes. Chris Trio.
Gooch, I have been staring at that orange-colored sky all week, and I'm very excited to talk about Fallout. How are you doing, sir?
I am elated to talk about Fallout.
You just finished last night, right?
I just finished last night, so I'm very fresh off of it, but...
That's nice, because I binged it all in like 3 days, so I'm glad you kind of spraced it out.
Honestly, though, a show well worth binging.
Easy, dude, well worth binging.
But before we get into it, we want to make a little of an announcement. This is the first time you're going to hear about it from us proper on the podcast.
Absolutely.
We are going to be doing a panel at Fan Expo Philadelphia the weekend of May 3rd to the 5th. Our panel is going to be on May 4th at 10:45 in the morning. It is going to be located in the greater Philadelphia, the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Philadelphia, which is weird.
You think it's confusing, the Philadelphia Convention.
You think it'd be the Philadelphia Convention Center since it's in Philadelphia, but it's the Pennsylvania Convention Center. It's going to be on level one in the workshop section in room 125. You can find this information on our social media posts, but we are going to be talking about the great superhero game Drought, a topic our lovely friend of the show, not friend of the show, host, guest,
We're also friends.
What are you?
Yeah, we're co-hosts.
Chris Trio,
friends,
the triple threat.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is Trio's leading the charge of this topic, so we're going to be doing the video game superhero mashing up.
Yeah.
Talk about the lack of superhero games.
Lack of good ones, anyways.
Once you sit down and think about it, you kind of realize it's like, yeah, there really, really isn't that much to pick from. Not a lot of great ones either.
Absolutely.
But we hope to see you there in the crowd again, May 4th, 10:45. A.M.
And then Fan Expo used to be Comic-Con, right?
Wizard World, right?
Yeah, like the Philly Comic-Con, for lack of a better term.
Right, it travels through the U.S. Yeah. So, like, I know it goes to Cleveland and, like, plenty of other cities, but right. May 4th, 10:45 a.m.
Star Wars Day.
Yeah.
I just realized that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's fun.
Yeah, I realize that like almost immediately.
You know what, Gooch? I'm not as big of a Star Wars fan, apparently.
But let's not talk about Star Wars and talk about the Fallout, baby.
Crawling out.
Dude. So where do we start
with this masterpiece
of a show? I mean, I think it's the best video game adaptation we've ever had. I think it beats The Last of Us in terms of that sort of genre, blows it out of the water. It's a much different adaptation in terms of, hey, we're not adapting a Fallout game, but we're making a show in the Fallout universe. And they nail it. I think they do a lot of homage to the games. If you're a fan of the games, you're going to have some moments that are going to be like, oh, specifically
Leo the whole time.
What?
You're going to be Leo the whole time. Just like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially if you're a Fallout 1, 2 and New Vegas fan specifically. I think if you, like, a lot of the aesthetics of Fallout 4 kind of carry over. But for the narrative and the lore, it's 1, 2 and New Vegas that are really hitting hard here. Dude, I just don't understand how right they nailed it.
It is pretty wild. And I think the main reason that I agree with you on the fact that this is the best video game adaptation over Last of Us, because don't get me wrong, The Last of Us is fantastic. It's incredibly well made. They understood the source material and they put it to screen. But that was more of a direct translation.
It's there.
You have the entirety of the story. Whereas with this, they're not adapting, like you said, a Fallout 1 or Fallout. They're taking elements from those story points and stuff like that and expounding upon them. But they understood the assignment. I said this before.
Yeah, they really did.
And I've never felt like a reverence for the source material come through like this for a video game adaptation before. It felt like Peter Jackson understanding Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He got it, I should say. He put it on screen. It's one of the best representations of that lore you can have. And I think Jonathan Nolan and his team did the exact same here. They understood it down to a T. Even this... My roommate and my girlfriend were sitting there. I was giggling like a little schoolgirl at a lot of
those last few episodes,
especially the last few episodes. But even the little stuff, like Lucy getting injured, going for a med kit, and then pulling out a stim pack.
Yeah,
and using it, and they're not like spending a moment on it to be like, look,
this is what a stim pack.
Yeah,
is,
it heals you. Like they understand that you're not an idiot and can understand from context clues. they respect your intelligence as an audience member. And, you know, it's funny because Jonathan Nolan before this was like, there was this whole quote going around. It's something about don't listen to the fans, or like, you can't really care what the fans think about when making these things to a degree, because like, you'll start catching yourself up. And I do think that that is a fair point to a degree. And I think it just shows you that in this case, it's the way to go. I mean, he understood the assignment. They understood what they were trying to do. And it is the best adaptation of a video game by far. Yeah. But let's get into some specific points here. Lucy, what did you think about it?
Oh, I loved Lucy. I think they really...
I love Lucy.
I do love Lucy. Yeah. I think they nailed the idea of like the Vault Dweller concept really well. I think Fallout 3 and 4 kind of lose that very quickly. Like the idea that like, you know, you're a Vault Dweller, you've never been to the surface, you have no idea about like what's going on. So like you really would have literally no ideas to anything that's going on. And I feel like in the games, you kind of quickly lose that for the sake of like the game. Like you're not an idiot the entire time.
Right.
But Lucy really feels like a fish out of water. Up until pretty much, I feel like the last, you know, not that she is a learned vault dweller and a wastelander, but I think she's starting to understand the world above her at the end. But like, you know, for the majority of the show, she, you know, is trusting of people when she shouldn't be, you know, kind of willing to like, you know, like give people a chance. And you find that in the wasteland, in the post-apocalyptic world, that you really can't give people a chance. It seems like, you know, pulling your gun and taking them down is the better move.
Absolutely.
I've never really seen Ella Purnell. Is it Purnell or Purnell? I've never heard anyone.
Ella Purnell. I would say Purnell. Purnell. Yeah.
She's awesome. I really like her. Like she's been in Yellow Jackets and Arcane. She voices a character in that Netflix show. Yeah, and I really dug her. I think the whole cast for all intents and purposes is fantastic. Moises Arias, you know, Rico from Hannah Montana coming back, and I feel like I was like, wow.
Being a star of the show for me.
I really liked Norm.
I loved Norm.
I'm excited to see where Norm's storyline goes in the next season, because I hope they kind of continue it, because they did leave it off on a cliffhanger, which was really cool. But you know, to see sort of, you know, we don't get one vault in the show. We get four, mm-hmm. four brand new vaults we've never seen in the games, 31, 32, 33, and 4. And I think they really displayed the idea of the vaults well, that they're experiments. And, you know, they don't really get into the fact that some are they do tell you that Howard's wife, I forget her name off the top of my head, like kind of informs like, yeah, like some vaults are just normal, but like some vaults are like,
we want to be in the good vaults.
Right. Yeah. Right. Some vaults are experiments, and you know, that's straight from the games as well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is set for those who don't play the games. This is canon to the games. We're 9 years after Fallout 4, the events of every Fallout game is on display here. We see that with the Brotherhood and the NCR. Shady Sands is a particular reference to Fallout 2.
Yeah, that was one. Because I started playing 3, obviously, and you told me. I meant to look into it a little bit more, but that's stuff that eluded me a little
bit. Yeah, so the founder of the NCR is a Vault Dweller from Vault 15, and you encounter Aridesh in Fallout 1 and his daughter Tandy. Aridesh is the first president of the NCR. He founds Shady Sands in the second game, or in between the first and the second game. And in the second game, you are a descendant of the Vault Dweller from Vault 13, who's the main character of 1. And then Tandy in Fallout 2 is like almost like 90 years old. And Shady Sands is like founded the NCR as a thing.
Right.
So the NCR originates in this area, this California area, that even New Vegas kind of takes place. So 1, 2, and New Vegas are kind of all in this California, Nevada, Arizona sector.
Peninsula.
It was interesting to see like them not take the Bethesda standpoint and do the East Coast,
right,
but take like the origin of the games in the West Coast and go off that.
They seem to have a very firm grasp of all of the games, as far as I can tell. I know there was some like hand-wringing about some, you know, retconning, which I still don't even think is really... like, maybe it might be, but at this point, it doesn't seem like that is the case. People saying, like, Fallout New Vegas doesn't... like, is not canon anymore. But then, like, you know, Todd Howard and Jonathan Nolan came out, were like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah,
it's a tight timeline, but, like, they were saying, like, before the nukes is when New Vegas happened. But anyways, to talk about El Pernal, just before the nuke that destroys Shady Sands.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. People were, I don't know. I'm too online, so maybe I'm paying attention to
this. I haven't really seen like the nitty gritty of that. Yeah.
Maddie's done some good videos on it so far.
There's always been with Fallout, since Bethesda's gotten the IP, there's always been these like lore purists that have had a problem with how Bethesda has sort of gone forward with the lore. And I think the Brotherhood is a good example, because if you've played Fallout 3 and like that's the only one you've played, and maybe New Vegas, like you probably don't really have a grasp on like what the real Brotherhood is.
No, absolutely. Because even in New Vegas, you really don't get a lot. They're just in the bunker.
So I think New Vegas depicts it fine, but I think it depicts how like on legs that are how like on shaky legs they are. It seems like the Brotherhood in the show is a faction. It's not. I guess, like, I was kind of thinking about this. I guess the Brotherhood is now with Arthur Maxon in the Capital Waste and the Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
I think he took them, or at least the ones who decided to go with
him. Some people are saying that's the Predwin. Like, there's a theory.
No, it's definitely not the Predwin.
Did they say that?
I'm pretty sure they confirmed it's not the Predwin.
Because I thought,
trailer came out, they confirmed it's the same kind of ship.
But it's not the Predwin?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. But, just to get back to Ella Purnell really quick, I really do think she is freaking... No, you're good. There's so much to go through here. She is truly fantastic in this role. There's a really tight line you have to walk when to not be annoying as this type of person, like this type of character, where you're over... Like, they're just so stupid where you're like, what are you even doing? She is just... She wants to give everyone the benefit of the doubt that they're a nice person, because she's grown up in this egalitarian society where everyone's supposedly truly gotten by on merit, and like they're trying to create this because their vault isn't really an experiment, but it like sort
it
of is a little bit
it
to
is.
A degree. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's much
like
more
a
regular
multi-purposed experiment.
Yes. And this was the first time we ever seen connected vaults like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was very interesting.
Yeah. So you have, you know, we'll get to the 31, but you know, we see at the beginning of the show that like vault 32 and 33 are swapping people to essentially not inbreed, and
right.
I thought it was funny with the jokes of like her fucking her cousin and stuff.
The
where like they messed around.
In this man
is really funny.
I've had there's a few parts, especially from Maximus, that made me genuinely laugh out loud. I've never seen a show or like a piece of media handle like irreverent comedy this well without taking away from the seriousness of the situation. If that makes any sense. I think they handle the comedy appropriately, but they let those moments of true drama kind of sit. But, dude, there's some, like, Tarantino-level, I feel like, violence in this, silliness to a degree, which I appreciate as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Ella Purnell, she's fantastic. She plays that interested but unknowing vault dweller very well, who gets it but isn't so annoying that she overbears you. I think Maximus...
I was going to say, you said stupid, and I instantly think of Maximus. I was talking to my cousin John last night. Shout out to John. And he was like, I really hated Maximus. I really liked him.
I did, too.
Because of how different you... I really expected him to be, like, very... pro-brotherhood and like really about what they're doing. And for those who don't know, the Brotherhood is not really a good faction. The idea of them is they hoard technology from humanity and choose to use it in their own way. And that's how they're
basically to gather technology,
right?
Right?
They
gather
technology and they use it for their own purposes. They don't share it with the world. They're not helping people.
And they believe,
they're keeping it away from everybody.
And that's because they believe humanity can't handle it. Right. Like, they're like, this is what happened with the Great War. We can't give people technology.
And the idea is it descends from Roger Maxon, who was alive like pre-bomb, apocalypse. And that's like the Brotherhood is like one of the factions from the beginning.
Interesting.
So they've been around through like the entire post nuclear catastrophe.
Yeah.
And they're bad guys. In three, they're good guys. And a group led by an elder named Elder Lyons, they go to the east, and he decides that fuck this whole like technocratic bullshit. Like, we're gonna like get that technology and we're gonna give back to people and like help the wasteland out. And you know, that was like most people's first introduction to the Brotherhood in Fallout 3. And, you know, And then if you play Fallout 1 and 2, you know that's not true. And then we get to 4, where Arthur Maxon has grown into an adult. He's the next lineage of the Maxon line, and he's like, we're getting back to base here.
Yeah.
Brings in the Brotherhood Outcasts from Fallout 3, because there's that group that, right. Remember, with the red outcasts, and black,
right. Yeah.
Power armor. They're the ones actually doing the Brotherhood stuff. They're really not the Outcasts. So it's interesting to see. We're really back to base with the Brotherhood being like, really, really strict.
Important,
but
yeah.
Again, it seems like the scribe that's leading them is really grasping for power and wants to, like,
right,
you know,
break
go
away.
Rogue. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I liked Maxon's stupidity to a degree because it showed
Maximus.
That, Maximus, thank you.
Yeah.
The M's are going to kill
me.
Yeah,
no, it's okay.
I think it's appropriate for its character because, like, they've just been taught to be kind of servants.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're shills. They're just
never
they're guys
really
that,
got that idea with the Brotherhood that they were
that they were that low, like on
yeah.
the totem pole.
Yeah,
and
they didn't really seem
like
that
just
much of dicks to each other.
Right, right. I think that's definitely something they've kind of leaned to in this. But I like the idea of him not understanding these things because he's just been raised from a young age and kind of propagandized into. Because I felt like he did love the Brotherhood and he wanted that knight status, and he does really kind of. Give a shit about the organization because he feels like they saved him, especially after the nuke.
Yeah, I mean, we find out that Maximus is, I guess, one of the sole survivors
yeah.
of the devastation of Sadie Sands.
It looks like he Indiana Jones'd it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Did you think? I think that was an actual nod to the joke.
It could have been. Yeah, I think I. Because
I mean,
sense.
There is an Easter egg in Fallout New Vegas where you find a skeleton with the Indiana Jones hat
in
the
fridge. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Fallout that would make
humor.
Sense to me.
Like that's
yeah.
definitely what that was a reference to. But yeah, and one of the big lore points of this game is again Shady Sands, capital of the NCR, has been nuked off the face of the earth.
They changed the location a little bit, right? Of Shady Sands or something.
Like, do people really like know exactly where Shady Sands was located? It was created with a Gek,
sure.
Actually, like originally from Fallout
right.
15. So, like, you know,
that's the Gek is the thing from Fallout 3, right?
The Garden of Eden creation,
right.
Kid. Yeah. So it like
I started 3 recently.
Yeah. So like the idea of it is it's like a portable
like seed to a degree.
Yeah,
it
fertilizes like the area so that you can like it can be habitable.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm not like it's pretty interesting, but yeah, it's like you know society in a box essentially. Like that's the idea of it.
Right.
I'm not sure. Like I know. I forget that one vault that Tranquility Lane is in 3. Like that vault has it, or no? You find it's 80. Is it 87? The one with the FEV experiments.
I think so.
Because you got to get Fox to go
right.
and get it for you. Remember?
Yeah.
Remember?
I remember. That's pretty cool.
I've been diving deep back into Fallout lore, so I'm like
I've been playing a ton for
familiar
sure.
again.
That's
it.
Awesome. But yeah, I don't know. Maximus didn't. He felt endearing to me actually a lot.
Yeah,
a lot of ways.
For some reason I kind of like enjoyed it. Like you
I
know,
could see it not working for
when
people,
he though. Was with Titus the knight, and you know he encounters the Yagwai, and he has like a very like player reaction of like fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it is played for laughs,
sure,
for mostly. But I think the fact that he just kind of lets him die and then takes his power armor.
But
it's pretty interesting.
Again, I think to the strength of the series, like that is kind of funny right there. But then I feel like it immediately turns to a seriousness of Maximus being like he's just shitting on Maximus and being like, "You're gonna fucking die for this. They're gonna kill you for letting this happen to me." And you see him just kind of slowly get serious, like, "Oh, I'm just gonna let you die. Like, why would you keep saying all this?"
You're stealing your own thing.
Yeah, and I actually really like that scene. But even that whole thing of having I forget that guy's Michael Rapaport or something.
Not sure his name.
He's a somewhat famous comedic actor, I think. Having him go from that, and I know you said you didn't really love the
TI voice.
Wait,
are you talking about Maximus?
Knight Titus. The knight that he was with first. You hear him in that like that voice, and I know you weren't a big fan of like the like very robotic.
Yeah, I think
whatever,
one of the negative things for me is that power armor voice. You know, the idea of power armor was never this villainous thing,
right.
But I guess for this show, maybe it kind of is.
Well, and I truly think it was for that reveal, because you go from this like, Knight Titus, he's very serious and talking in this robotic voice, to Michael Rapaport taking off of something and be like, "Oh, what the fuck? What did you do to me? You let me die." And like, I felt like it was kind of almost for that reveal
to make it kind of a more yeah, the
like,
context is important there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really like that scene. And then he takes over the armor. That scene of Maximus, there are a few slight tweaks to like little things, which I think you have to make in order to make things make sense, where you need a key to take out someone's fusion core now. And when he gets his fusion core taken out by the new squire that shows up and he's just just stuck in the power armor, I was like, that would be terrifying. I would go crazy. Like, you're just in this fucking suit that you can't move in. Just a small point. But let's move on to, I think, the star of the show for me.
Mr. And that's for a lot of people. Walton Goggins.
Mr. Walton Goggins himself. Ghoul. Cooper Howard. What a name.
You think they named Howard after Todd?
Oh, I guess. Sure. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, we were talking about sort of the reverence of the series. Todd Howard was an executive producer on the show.
Yeah, and
so.
He seemed to have, Bethesda in general, but also him, had a very heavy hand in, like, the lore. But it seemed like the show was in good hands. I mean, Jonathan Nolan and them understood the games very well. They definitely played them.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Ella Purnell went back, and I don't know if she played 3 or 4 or New Vegas or whatever, but she said, like, you know, multiple times that she played it.
I wouldn't be surprised if she did 4.
Yeah, and it was interesting to hear, like, that, like, oh, yeah, like, you know, like, at first, like, I didn't want to, but then I was like, no, like, I think I should.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just the way she was talking, and I know, like, Walton Goggins didn't end up playing it, but, you know, he's like, I don't think I want to, and, like, he kind of explained why, and I was like, oh, you know, that sound, it's not like he's playing Master Chief, where, like, you really need to understand this character, like, you're breathing life into this character, like, maybe it's good that you don't have this preconceived notion of, like, what a ghoul is and how a ghoul should act. Because we definitely do.
I don't think, honestly, someone needs to play these games if they're going to do it. Like, does someone need to read Dune if they're going to act in it? No. You need someone there that understands it, though. And they had the team there that understood it and conveyed it to Walton Goggins. And, like, he got it. He understood what they were saying.
Yeah.
And he put it to screen. And God damn it, man. One of the coolest characters I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I love the opening of the show kind of giving you, it's like, hey, like, this was society, and we, you know, we show that Cooper, and I guess at this point in his career, seemed to be a bit washed up, being a cowboy at a party in his, you know, his Vault-Tec looking...
Like, colored-themed, like, cowboy outfit.
At this point, it makes sense, but, as soon as I saw him, I'm like, yeah, he is the Vault-Tec colors on.
Yeah.
I wonder what that's about. And then, you know, the nukes drop, and... You know,
dude, what a harrowing scene.
Yeah.
Like, in the way of, like, it's so scary because they're all sitting there and the mom's like, turn off the TV. Let's not worry about it today. Like, we don't have to.
Right.
Let's enjoy the
looming
party.
Danger of, you know, nuclear fallout.
And they're just sitting in the middle of, like, a barbecue for this kid's birthday and the bombs just go off in the back. And that scene of Goggins, of Cooper, just, like, looking out at them. It's truly fantastic. I don't think you could have had a better opening to the
show. And, you know, I like how we end of, like, you know, what he says, he's like, you know, he's like, where's my family? So it looks like his wife and daughter are alive.
Probably somewhere. So,
we'll get to the ending. But, like, he didn't make it. And so I wonder what happened to him. He's a ghoul. So he must not have made it to a vault and to become a ghoul.
But his daughter was with him, so that's the only thing that's confusing to me.
Right, right, yeah.
I'm wondering how that will work out.
Yeah.
But I think he had one of my favorite storylines. I think they use the present-day stuff just enough, because I think there's a line that
I
you
love
can step over.
The injection of the pre-war
I completely agree.
Stuff.
I do think you can overstep that boundary, though, because, you know, Fallout's pretty squarely about after the bombs drop. And I think if you start dipping, like, if, like, in a whole episode maybe is set in the before time, I think you're kind of going a little overboard in this first season. But I think now that you've gotten some time to breathe and they've given us this first season, you might be able to set an entire episode next season.
Yeah,
in the pre-war
I mean,
time.
In the games, we really don't see any pre-war. Like,
except
we
Fallout
hear
4
about
was the
it,
first time.
Fallout
yeah.
4, yeah, we actually, like, our opening sequence is pre-war. So it was kind of like that, but, like, you know, there was a lot of juicy lore bits, especially towards the end of the show. But also to show the viewer, it's like, hey, like, this is what society was like, especially since the fact that, you know, the game deviates in our timeline at World War II, where the develop of atomic energy is kind of what proliferates in society, and that is sort of like how society is based around, like, atomic energy.
They don't focus on computational power as much as, like, nuclear energy and stuff like that, because they're still, like, you see the computers, they're all these, like, old 50s style
and, like, the music doesn't really progress, like, everything kind of stays, dress and, like, the way people are, the cars, you know, they're still
fucking
smoking
music,
in 2077. like inside and in corporate settings. Like, yeah, it's again, it's like retro futuristic. And it's cool, you know, ghouls in the game are sort of like that. Usually the ghouls who are still alive are pre-war ghouls.
Mm-hmm.
And they're people who lived before the bombs and just didn't make it to the shelter and they didn't get killed by the radiation.
They were mutated.
Yeah, they get mutated to the point where like they're still alive, but it was cool to see. We never really seen a ghoul kind of
transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Really like coming to blows with like the feralness of becoming a ghoul, because in the games it's ghouls who are still humans and then the feral ghouls, which are like the zombie type characters. We see like one or two of those. And then the one friend who gets killed, who's like, you know, almost turning, but you know,
right.
the ghoul, our titular ghoul, the Cooper Howard, you know, puts him out of his misery. And he seems to be, I'm curious as to what he's taking to stave it off. I don't think it's Jet.
So that's the thing. That seems to be a new element that they've added. Because I thought the idea was after a while, your brain just rots and you go feral. That's at least how I took it in the games before.
Yeah, yeah.
So in this, there seems to be this, you know, some type of drug that he's taking that's keeping his mind from going, like, crazy.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's a whole new drug.
Yeah.
Because Jet. At the one point, the guy takes it.
The first episode when the Raiders come into Vault 33. Yeah, mm-hmm. the
guy
Raiders,
just freaks.
Here's some Jet.
Dude, you know? Again, just the little things that they could have put any drug in there. They could have done anything, but no, they took the actual drug. And even like all the company names and all the background dressing, they did it. I can't believe that they did it.
The Vault's practical trio. How important was that? They felt like they were
in a place.
They felt, and they were wearing the vault jumpsuits, and it felt like a vault, 110%. We've seen this a lot in the game, so we know what they look like, what they sound like, what they feel like, what the Pip-Boy looks like, sounds like, feels like. Everything.
They did redesign the Pip-Boy a little bit, which I think they just sleeked it down.
It's that one in the back from Fallout 4. It's like that version of it, but like a little different, which is fine. I can understand, and it makes sense.
Practicality, you're slimming it down a little bit.
Right, but in Lord, there are different versions of Pip-Boys, and like, you know, we've already seen that before with Fallout 1 and 2 and 3 and 4.
And 76 has like a different one, right? That's like an older one. Yeah, you know, it looks cool.
We've seen it. So like to buy the idea that different vaults got different versions of Pip-Boys is totally...
Absolutely.
Fine for me.
I think they did truly also a fantastic job of marrying the three storylines of Maximus the Ghoul and but, I do think they kind of,
but they don't team them up together, and I like that.
I do. I agree.
I think it
kinda, all marries very well. Yeah. I do think they run into the trapping, which I'm willing to accept because, you know, you got to get the show to go forward, that they keep somehow running into each other in this huge wasteland.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Which is, I think they kind of try and explain it with a few things, like, you know, the one squire's using the tracker and stuff like that, and the ghoul has the dog.
The tracker on the Pip-Boy was I was like, that's awesome.
That is
man.
Cool. Again, things you can expound about. Like, we've never seen that before.
She reaches her destination and her waypoint goes away.
It's
you
so
know?
Good.
Like, she put a waypoint on her Pip-Boy map.
Even at the beginning when they're all vote, that she's going into to apply to be like the breeder or whatever, and they all like vote on their Pip-Boy and it comes up and gives her the thing.
It's some
great little moments that really kind of add up. But, you know, I think it's tough to take three storylines and marry them together in a way that makes sense and is cohesive and is enjoyable. And by the time you get to the end of the season, you just feel so satisfied. I feel like I got a lot of the answers to the questions that I wanted. Felt like a complete story, but they set up a whole new one that I'm very excited for.
What? Ooh, sorry. You're good. We haven't had a spill in a while.
Well, that's why we do tops. You don't do topless on a water bottle.
Yeah, shirts on the podcast.
Absolutely.
No topless.
we're not on OnlyFans.
What did you think about Moldaver?
Moldaver, I thought she was an interesting character.
We fully know exactly who she is.
No, so
yet.
I really like the idea of them leaning into like the Red Scare aspect of being back in the before war time. Of like, they just keep everyone who doesn't like war, they're like, Pinko, fuck you, Pinko. And by the end, you know, Moldaver's just like, no, I don't want, you know, the world to end here. And I think it's a kind of really kind of interesting exploration of the type of political like climate they were dealing with, especially back in the 50s, and the way that that's the idea that it just kept going and going and going. They're fighting over resources, right?
Yeah, there's a resource war.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And the idea is the Americans have China on the back foot, right? And they're invading China, and that's when they launch the bombs.
No. No? There's nothing going on. Anchorage is the last battle between China and America.
Okay, interesting.
Which is a conflict that Cooper Howard was in.
Right.
And, you know, that we play in a Fallout 3 DLC. We play through the Battle of Anchorage. And that, like, ends the conflict. But the idea is,
what
I've
seen on Wikipedia,
like, they're kind of, well, maybe I'm a little wrong.
They were at least as far as, like, Wikipedia and stuff was saying, like, the Americans were invading China. And, like, they were starting to make way. And, like, Chinese were like, fuck you. Launch.
Yeah, so in the last episode, they kind of, there's this, maybe I'm jumping a little ahead about.
No, it's
But I'm pretty confident China launches the nukes. We don't.
Right, right. That's the implication, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what actually happens, that, like, China nuked us.
Yes.
And we nuked them.
And then it was a two-hour exchange that just destroyed the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Great War that lasted 2 hours.
Yes. Yeah. 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 On October 23rd, 2077. That's why you see, like, Halloween decorations still around.
By the way, can I also say this show does a great job of not, like, beating you over the head with story points? Because you could easily start off that first beginning scene where they're like, they have everything on the screen. It's 2077. America's at war. And they kind of have, like, a little bit of thing on the you know, he's talking on the channel being like, what the fuck's going on? Warren, she's like, turn that off. But I think they do really respect your intelligence a lot in the show. And I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun to watch it with my girlfriend, who has no basis at all for Fallout. And she loved it. By the end, she was like, that was awesome. I can't wait for season two. And I'm like,
yeah.
Music to my ears, man. But yeah, I think Cooper and, like, that whole exploratory idea of him dealing with the present day and then moving forward was maybe my favorite part.
Yeah,
but
he's still, like, kind of on that mission to sort of, like, find his family and he's a bounty hunter. And I loved his guns, you know, that when we see it in the, is it the first or second episode?
Yeah, I think so. First, maybe.
Yeah, you know, when he uses, like, he's using, like, a in pistol Philly. That shoots, like, mini nukes.
Yeah.
Like, which is, like, again, like, as a game player, like, totally feasible. Like, yeah. we've seen the experimental Merv and the mini nuke launcher. Yeah. Like, we've seen the rocket launcher and the shish kebab. Like, we've seen crazy weapons. So this isn't too far out of the possibility.
They use the junk jet.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. That whole first scene of him being introduced is awesome. I gotta say, when they pull him up, I'm like, oh, what's going on? I guess he was being, like, tortured or something.
Yeah, Philly also seems to be just a random, like, trash
settlement.
Phil.
Yeah,
yeah, like, and so you know what's funny? Variety misinterpreted that, and they actually, I was reading up on it. They called it, like, Philly, like Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, and they were wrong. It was like Philly as
in
like
landfill.
Phil.
Yeah,
yeah,
like, that's funny. That's
yeah,
a good,
which
that's good,
which is cool. And I think the idea for, like, you know, Lucy leaving the vault, going after Dad, really Fallout 3, especially with their origins that we find out that, you know, Hank McClane was not born in the vault.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we'll get into more on that later. But, you know, that's very Fallout 3, where Liam Neeson, who plays your dad in Fallout 3, is not from Vault 101.
No.
You weren't born in Vault 101, but, you know, you're told that you are. And that, you know, hey, everyone's been born down here.
Yeah,
and in Vault 101, you live, you die down here. We're not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the vault opens. You go after your dad, try to figure out, like, what's going on.
Liam Neeson.
They take the same approach with this. But going back to the Philly point, I think Philly is supposed to be our Megaton.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
It's that first town you get to.
100%.
It's a little crazy. I was kind of a bit annoyed. Like, I don't think everyone in the Fallout universe is, like, these, you know, like, kind of hillbilly, like, scrap together people. Like, not everyone looks like that.
But what else would they look like? Because I felt, even going back to...
A lot of people
to
look normal in Fallout.
Not really? Because I'm playing Fallout 3 and everyone's dressed in, like, rags and shit.
Yeah, they're dressed in rags, but they're not, like, you know, hey, you know... You know, like, they're not, like,
sure,
stupid.
But you got also, like, you got, like, this is California. Maybe got some, you're Southern California. You got some Southerners out there. And, you know, I actually really
like the guy that Lucy runs into. With,
I
like,
thought
the
that scene was really fun. I liked that one a lot because it didn't feel like every character was that.
No,
at least
I was just like, I hope every character isn't like that, for sure. Yeah, and we run into, like, a few Raider groups, and they mention the Fiends at one point, which is a Raider group from
those
the
two
New
people
Vegas
were Fiends.
Area.
The ones that they crossed the bridge with.
Yeah.
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 That try to go for their Pip-Boy.
Yeah.
But I fucking love this show, man. I don't know where do we want to go next with the I feel like we covered all the characters for the most part, except
we were talking about Moldaver.
Right.
Yeah. And I she you know, clearly someone from pre-war, but, like, you know, she's not a Vault-Tec employee, and we find out that Vault 31 is a cryogenic vault for like the entirety of Vault-Tec.
Like their executives, like. it seemed to me.
You know, it was always kind of a question of like, you know, it is weird that kind of Vault-Tec didn't survive the war, but like I think this inclusion that like, hey, there's a vault where like they're kind of like
scheming, all the head honchos.
They're kind of scheming to come back, and they're not all back at once, but they're. They kind of like really like, you know, Betty being the secretary that we see when Cooper goes to Vault-Tec to kind of spy on his wife and to find out that, you know, Vault-Tec is meeting with Mr. House from New Vegas. I mean, we see him and we can possibly kill him in New Vegas. And Sinclair from Big Mountain, who we see creates the Sierra Madre from New Vegas, and the Repcon and Westech. Like, we see all these companies we've heard countless times. Like, that was like a really
cool
moment.
It was really
cool,
man.
And they kind of all like get on the spot. It's like, hey, like, we're gonna do experiments in vaults, and we want you to do that too.
Yeah.
So that, like, you know, like the idea that like time is this the time is this like valuable asset, and like that's how we're going to win the war by surviving.
True. And it's like, it's the truest form of capitalism, if you will, where they bring them in. They're like, the best idea wins. Like, you guys all get your vaults, and whoever comes out on top, that's who wins. And
right.
So there, I keep seeing this implication. I don't know. Maybe I completely missed when they do say this. Like,
and Hank McClain that vault is top, one of those people too.
That vault, yeah, that was a great reveal.
Yeah.
That Vault-Tec drops the first bombs.
Yeah, I think they. They said that because, like, hey, like, we could just do this.
Yeah.
I don't think they did. Right. I'm really convinced that Vault, like, I think that's like an interesting thing to throw in, that Vault-Tec had the idea of starting the apocalypse themselves so they can kind of, you know, like, put this plan into action.
Yeah.
But the idea that
their vaults don't
because
mean anything.
We know from new Mr. House that, you know, he was like preparing, you know, the idea with Mr. House is
he was running simulations, right?
Right. He was running simulations about New Vegas, and he was going to protect Vegas from the bombs, which he does, like, almost successfully. And I was listening to this, to a dialogue from New Vegas, when he's talking about it, and he's like, he had the platinum chip coming to Vegas,
right.
And it was 20 hours too late. Like, you know, the bombs dropped, like, the chip was going to come the next day,
right.
And then the bombs dropped that day, and he, from what he had available to him, he was able to stop like 79 warheads, but a few got through enough to do some damage, but Vegas was saved.
Yeah,
like, he saved Vegas. So, you know, I don't think they would totally retcon this whole thing to be like, yeah, Vault-Tec dropped the nukes. It's like that seems like unrealistic to me little bit, but the idea that Vault-Tec had the idea is totally something
I need
do.
To go back and watch the scene, because also it seems like they are just it felt like to me more they were working behind the scenes and like the political machinations type of like lobbying and being like,
right,
they bought the cold fusion reactor so they could shelve it, and that way there's the resource war continues on, all this stuff. And, you know, it doesn't really make any sense to me that they would drop it with, like, you know, Cooper and his daughter out there, like,
right. They were not ready.
Yeah.
We know that.
So I don't know, because I keep seeing people online being like, this conclusively means that Vault-Tec dropped a bomb.
No, I don't think so.
Which, again, I'd have to go back and watch the scene. It didn't feel that way to me when I watched it.
It was just an idea. It's like, we could. And then when once we're ready, we can just go.
Right.
You know,
because they don't want their investment drying up. Just because if the war ends, those vaults just sit there and degrade and they never are used. So, yeah, that whole scene of, like, even Walton Goggins sitting there, like, his acting, man. Dude, Walton Goggins, every time I see him, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's one of the best actors of our generation. I always forget
really?
For some
you
reason.
Like him that much, huh?
I really enjoy him to, like, an unruly degree. He's so good in this. He's hilarious when he wants to be funny. There's a show called Vice Principals with him and Danny McBride. It was, like, 2 seasons on HBO Max.
Yeah, I remember.
One of the funniest shows I've ever seen. He's hilarious in it. Even in The Righteous Gemstones, like, he plays serious so well. He plays comedic very well. He's just fantastic. He turns on the charm and whatever. I mean, dude, Hateful Eight, him in that. Like, he plays an asshole, racist piece of shit. But by the end of the movie, I'm like, nah, he's all right. He's kind of cool. Like, he's so good. I really think he's truly undervalued in a lot of ways. And that ghoul makeup, man.
Looks good.
It looks amazing, and I know
they did it practically, man. I mean, they CGI'd his nose off.
Of course, because that's what they did for Red Skull too, way back.
Yeah, it looks great.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Also, Tara, I hate looking at a hole in someone's face.
So, let's criticize real quick.
Okay.
How did you feel about Kyle MacLachlan de-aging?
Totally fine. Ian, it's funny because we were watching with Ian, and he was like, and I was like, oh, that de-age looks good. He was like, he was de-aged? Like, he had no idea.
Okay.
I think it looked fine.
Yeah, I think it was all right. But again, I'm not going to get like upset about it. It's not like a Luke Skywalker situation where it's a character people know and love.
That makes sense to the degree. But also, I think the innate problem with de-aging someone is that I know they aren't that age.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like right. My subconscious is like, that's not real.
People aware like us.
That's
like,
what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. So I do think your regular pleb isn't even thinking twice about that.
It was cool.
That.
Like, you know, speaking of Kyle MacLachlan, loved him in this role.
He was
cool
great.
Seeing him. In Dune a few months ago, his like first role
right.
to now his most latest. You know, I think he really fit the overseer type really well.
He was
so good.
And
you know, like the fact that he was this like devious Vault-Tec exec on the back end was really kind of surprising. And to hear that, you know, like you know, his wife was just kind of you know, somebody from the vault and like really not involved in any of this. And he had kids sort of out of love.
Yeah.
And then she steps out of line from this plan, from this, you know, this business corporate plan that he has. And he totally
just kills her and takes
the kids. Divorces it. And it looks like Moldaver and her had some sort of relationship as well.
Right.
Because she keeps her there. Why else would she keep
so
her as,
to
a,
me,
as a ghoul if
so
she didn't like care
about her? I was
wondering
that. I think it was more to show Kyle MacLachlan what he did.
No, I think they had a relationship and he...
See, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, from the flashback scenes, they seem very...
I just took it as they cared about each other. Like, she was a good friend and then, yeah, Kyle, he kills her and then she leaves her alive as, like, look what you did.
Right, sure.
Yeah. But no, I can see what you're saying, too.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because, yeah, and like, again, Shady Sands is nuked. I was kind of assuming that maybe the Brotherhood did it with... the help of
right.
McClane, I guess. Like, I guess, you know, Vault-Tec has nukes.
They have
somewhere.
Nuke silos, probably. I'm sure there's a nuke silo attached to 33 and 32.
Yeah.
And so it seems to me that there's a bunch of Vault-Tec execs that were in Vault 31.
Yeah.
And the 32
the guy is the brain.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
I love
it. In like the Roomba. And he came with the needle.
It's so
Norm,
good, man.
Dude, I fucking love Norm.
It's so good.
When they're investigating Vault 32, I was like, dude.
He pulls up the hacking screen.
Oh my god, dude! I was gonna cry
again.
I was like,
and they don't like linger on it; they just do it.
Right?
They're
he doesn't even do a dud. He gets the password like one go. He doesn't do like allowance or removes the dud or something like that. Like Moises Ari's character was really cool. Like I just thought like there's something really compelling about the fact that like we're going back to the vault and Norm is like really sus about everything that's going on.
I kind of thought we were gonna leave him alone and I'm glad we didn't.
And even with the girl whose husband dies, who has the one eye, who's also like a Vault-Tec exec, like, you know, her being like weirdly promiscuous kind of makes sense now.
She just wants more kids. Yeah, exactly. And
like,
so
like
it seems like everyone in Vault 31 was picked for their genetic makeup. Like they were the best genes that they could get.
Right.
And then all the 31s are people or execs that they come in and you know, mate with, for lack of a better
term.
Well,
like both.
Yeah.
Like Stephanie is from Vault 31.
So that's what I mean. So I
But she's also a birth person because she's
a
girl.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I take that as everyone from 31, like everyone, sorry here. Everyone in 31 was a normal individual that paid to be in a vault, but they were checked like for genetics.
No. 31 is comprised.
I'm sorry, 33. My apologies. I'm getting them backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
33 are the regular people who just signed up for a vault, and 32.
Yeah,
and
in
then
the beginning.
31
yeah.
are all the execs that come in, and you know.
And I guess 32 and 31, they populate them both, and then they just switch them around. Like,
and
that's
32 figured out what was happening. It seemed they realized they were a genetic experiment.
So Moldaver must have knew, and she must have been cryogenically frozen as well. I'm curious to see who she was working for or what kind of happened there, because it's like, how is she still alive?
I'm
assuming she had to have been frozen.
Because other people could make shelters of some kinds. And if she, like, obviously.
Right.
If
House can keep himself alive and actually not successfully, he ages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find out, spoilers, in Fallout New Vegas that, you know, Mr. House is like living on through his technology, but his body is still alive, but it's a decrepit
old man. He's like in a pod.
Thing. Yeah.
But yeah, that whole experimental idea. And then you go into Vault 32 and there's just all fucked up, and I love seeing all the skeletons, you know, placed out. Like, it's so very classic
Fallout. Right. Classic countering of all, and you're learning through the environmental storytelling what happened here.
Yeah.
I don't really think we know what happened to 32. It does, like...
So, as I
understand... Moldaver must have knew, or, she found it. Like, she must have knew that Vault 32 was there, and she knew how to get into it. I think Vault 32 just actually fell apart.
Well, it did, but, and then I think that's what happened. I don't think it had anything to do with the outside world. To me, it seemed they found out what was happening. They found out they were like this genetic breeding experiment with all the Vault Tech X executives. They went crazy, tried to get out of the vault, couldn't. Muldaver comes back using his wife's Pip-Boy to get into Vault 32, come in that
right,
way.
Right, true. Yeah.
It goes from there. And then they now use Vault 32 to repopulate. And
then
and
then
the
Muldaver, so I was doing some research. She's not the leader of the NCR. She seems to be a leader of like a rogue faction of the NCR.
Well, she was part of like the, not resistance, but like the, she was part of the communist, the Reds before the war that wanted the war to end. Like, you know, the non-war interventionists, it seemed like they knew where it was going. They were having those meetings with all the... Again, very 50s Hollywood where they're all meeting secretly.
Ronald Reagan era,
Even like we saw it with Cillian, with Oppenheimer. Like, you know, when he goes to that party and stuff like that. Super prevalent in that area. Or that era, I should say. I just thought it was super interesting. We're definitely going to get more from her. Oh, so she's actually... Does she die?
Yes.
Well, that's right. She does. And I did like that last
moment. She gets shot and she comes back and her and Maximus are looking at... Los Angeles lit up from the cold fusion thing. Yeah. We need to talk about what's his face? What's that actor's name?
I can't remember. Let me see.
Yeah.
Of the Enclave. Oh, wow. He's really far back in here, huh?
Yeah. I mean, he's only on screen for an episode or two, but I like how they take off the idea of like the cybernetic dogs from like Rex in Fallout New Vegas from another Enclave group. The Enclave made those dog companions too. You know, and understanding that the Enclave remnants still exist. I mean, we get that in New Vegas.
Wilzig. It was Michael Emerson.
From Lost. And, you know.
Yeah.
He's like a character actor you see a lot.
Yeah, it is interesting. We got a little bit of the Enclave, but not much.
No,
we see
that
little, and I like it, honestly.
I think the Enclave, really, their nail was in the coffin with 3. They're in 2 as well.
Oh, I think they're going to play a major part in the next season. Like, how
you think
can
so?
I mean, you can't show them. They have a full facility. They seem to be really ready and raring to go. I feel like you can't just have them go away.
They're
going to be like, who took my fucking cold fusion reactor? You know what I mean? They're going to go to the... I think they're going to start... Hey, that's my cold fusion reactor. I think they're going to show up and be like, to the Brotherhood, like, hey, what the fuck? That's our cold fusion reactor. Yeah. And I think there's going to be some conflict there. And then the NCR, I think, is obviously going to come back in. I would just be very surprised if you just see this whole... Like, they just show this whole thing. Like, the cold fusion reactor comes from the Enclave. They show this whole kind of set and where they are. And then they're just like, we're not going to see them again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I think a few more things. Vault 4 was interesting to see. Again, we're seeing like a vault that kind of fell apart and repopulated with...
We see how the gulpers are made, which I thought was interesting. That was a fucking rough scene. When she gives birth to the gulpers and they eat her.
Oh, that was rough.
They did change the gulpers look a little bit, but I think that they did it...
They just did put more detail in them.
Well, they made them look more humanoid. Because I noticed, like, they have, like, human arms and, like, a human torso.
And there's fingers in their
mouths. Yeah, in their mouths. So I was
with the gulper in episode 2 was really...
Was really good. Yeah, it was really awesome. I did like Johnny Peppertone, who plays the new squire. Yeah. The scream made me laugh so hard for some reason when he goes, and he gets pulled out.
And him with, like, his broken foot and the doctor that turns him into a ghoul, which is funny.
So he seemed to have... I think he gave him the thing that... the Coopers use
take?
So
because I was like, what the fuck is he giving him? And I can totally buy that there's some like cock concoction that is
being
made.
Thought he just got like high and was like seeing that almost at first, like it didn't actually happen, and he was like, oh, okay.
And I like the reference to like the radio stations that exist, and you know, this guy's just like running this radio station,
Fred,
like...
Armisen. That was so good.
Who is that?
That's Fred Armisen. He was from SNL and stuff. You would know. He's in Portlandia show and stuff. You would definitely...
I mean, I definitely recognize what's his face from What We Do in the Shadows.
I can't remember his name.
Cogsworth's name.
Yeah.
Or Cogsworth's voice. And, you know, he's like, he bought my voice. And he's like, fucking, you know, like,
he's
cursing up with, you know, Cooper Howard at the party and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, getting to the end, sort of. I mean, we can jump back a little bit if you want to. But
I feel like we covered a lot. To be honest, there's so much that it's just we're just gonna jump.
Yeah, there's a lot. But you know, we kind of end off where, you know, Lucy kind of has this moment with her dad and realizes her dad's a really bad person,
like a monster.
Everything she's taught is like been like, well, this guy wasn't this at all. And I really like this, like Lucy's like come to
Jesus moment a little.
Yeah, where she's like, holy shit.
She's like, maybe I won't save my dad, actually.
Yeah, like, I don't know. And, like, I like how she, like, kills her mom. You know, like, puts her out of her misery. Or when the ghoul shows up and is like, hey, you can come with me. Or, you know, you can just fuck off. You're gonna die.
Yeah.
And, you know, she, like, holds the gun. Immediately, I knew she was pointing it at her mom, not at the ghoul. And, you know, kills her. And then, you know, now all roads lead to New Vegas.
Yeah, McLaughlin walks away with his power armor. So I did like that moment of him just truly trying to convince Lucy. And just losing. And he's like, all right, I guess I just got to go. And so...
Right.
So, who is he going to see? So, I didn't notice it.
Actually, I assume House.
That's my only guess.
He must know he's alive.
But the only thing that... actually, I didn't even catch, like, while I was watching the show, I didn't realize it was nuked. Like, it was blown up. Like, it was all deteriorated.
I don't...
It looks broken down. It does not look active.
So, here's my question. Is that just the rendering of what they decided to make New Vegas look like? Because, like...
I think it would have lights and stuff going if it was active, if it was still like a working strip.
Yeah.
I think it looked decrepit on purpose.
Yeah. So like, and this brought in a lot of questions of like, you know, the Tops is really what gives it away. The
right.
Tops Casino or no, the, sorry, the Lucky 38.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because you have the tower. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, we got to wonder what the canon of New Vegas is. Who won the second battle of the Hoover Dam? Is House alive? Did Caesar Legion win? Did the NCR win? You know, what is really going on with the NCR? Is President
Kimball
still
in? Where is New Vegas
again?
It's in the Mojave Wasteland, which is it Cali?
No.
It's Vegas. It is Vegas still.
Where's Vegas in real life?
No, because I thought Vegas was actually, I thought he like, made, because that's why it was New Vegas. I don't know why.
On top of
it. Okay, I thought it was. All right, I just want to make sure.
True. Where's Las Vegas?
I believe it's Nevada.
Yes, it is.
If
Nevada.
I'm not mistaken. Well, because you know you're dealing with the. I was confused because it was funny. I was talking to my girlfriend about it, and I was like confusing myself. I was like, well, it's New Vegas, so it's in. But then the NCR is there, but that's New California Republic. California's of course right next to Nevada, though, so that makes sense.
Yes.
Geography.
not very far. So, I guess he jetpacked all the way there. That's true. You know, the Deathclaw skull was pretty cool. Yeah. I like how they didn't blow the Deathclaw load either.
They didn't blow the Ron Perlman load either. Because I think that's coming. I think we will see him.
We didn't see the Meyer lurks or anything like that. They didn't like blow their load. Like no super mutants.
Thank
like,
you for actually bringing that up. You see a super mutant hand at one point.
You do.
When remember he's coming out of the Enclave and it like falls off the gurney. The hand like comes out and you see it. As he's leaving with the dog,
maybe
it's like a very brief thing.
Maybe.
He like looks down at a gurney,
and it makes sure they might be experimenting with it, the FEV virus
as
well.
So I do. That was probably my one gripe,
which is the forced evolutionary virus, which is a pre-war virus that made super soldiers essentially, but didn't work. For your information.
So I lost my train of thought. What was I going to say?
You're talking about New Vegas, NCR. Forced evolutionary virus, super mutant hand. We were talking about the creatures.
Oh, creatures. That's it.
On.
We didn't get a lot of creatures. We got rad roaches. We got the gulpers. I would have
Which
liked
is,
to see.
A gulper's like a pretty new creature. Far Harbor. And they were, like you said,
redesigned a little bit. But I would have liked to see maybe a few more like monsters and stuff. Maybe some mole rats. I don't know.
Room for season two.
We got some rad roaches, which was great. I thought, kill me if I ever run into those in real life. I would have liked to see a few more monsters, but I think overall they nail it. And that power armor, man.
Looks great.
It looks fantastic.
Looks great. Practical.
It really does. Practical. They definitely touched the legs up a little bit here and there while they're walking. I could tell just cause you know, that's not going to look perfect when it's walking, but that's what they do in everything. They'll CGI touch up a person's face now. So, you know, that's just the name of the game. We find out at the end of the season that we're going to New Vegas, Scooch, and I am...
Blue Moon.
I think I'm going to rewatch this series a little bit, like, throughout this next week.
Alone.
The music, too, was perfect.
Yeah, I'm sure for anyone who doesn't play the games, this, like, all these songs will now just remind you of Fallout like they do for all of us. Yeah, you know, like, you know, hacking and whacking and slashing. Hack, whack, chopping that meat. You know, like
Orange Colored Sky. There's so many, these
1950s big band songs that like are, you know, especially the Ink Spots and maybe
Bing Crosby
and Don't Want to Set the World on Fire. Mm. And yeah,
are there Sinatra in any of these?
Yeah, Blue Moon is a Frank Sinatra song. Duh. But yeah, okay. I think that's it. I think like New Vegas,
I'm sure this cost a pretty penny. To be honest,
I'm sure the Ink Spots was nothing.
Yeah,
you know,
that's interesting. All right, Gooch, does that wrap us up on Fallout?
That wraps us up. We will see you next time.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for watching. If you've been with us live on twitch.tv/DelcoNerdNetwork, you can find this podcast anywhere podcasts are found. Just search Delco Nerd Network on your favorite service. We are on all your favorite social media pages as well, everywhere with an at sign. We are at Delco Nerds. We got a Facebook page, Discord channel. All that good stuff will be linked down below. You can also email us your comments, questions, or concerns to DelcoNerds@gmail.com. We'd be happy to get back to you, and all this information can be found on our website, DelcoNerdNetwork.com. We hope to see you at Fan Expo on May 4th, 10:45 a.m.
Soon as like the doors open. Center. The doors open at 10, so we're like one of the first panels.
So come say hi. We'd love to see you guys. But other than that, for Gooch, I've been Trio. Thanks for watching, guys. Stay nerdy. We will see you next time. We'll be right back.